Hi, I'm Simon Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight of the Starlight Campbell Band.
Welcome to the Supertown Show.
Rumors spreading round in that Texas town. About to check outside the game. You know what I'm talking about. Just let me know if you wanna go to that whole mile on the range. They got a lot of nice girls. I'm racing.
LaGrange, ZZ Top, from the 1973 album Tres Hombres, which I think is three blokes.
It is as well. Nicely translated there, darling. Did you know that song's about a brothel?
Of course.
Well, I didn't until I researched it. But it's there was an illegal but tolerated brothel outside LaGrange in Texas, and it featured three ladies from Louisiana, New Orleans, and it was run by a lady called Mrs. Swine. But this is like 1844.
That's incredible. Well, you know something? The thing about that track to me, it's all about that drum break, or the two drum breaks.
You think?
Frank Beard, yeah, because all of a sudden it comes, and it's so tight, so tight. And most people, when you see this played, it's always using some type of Gibson. But of course, he used a 1955 Strat, I think,
yeah,
through Marshall Super Lead 100,
yeah,
which is the classic Jimi Hendrix setup, really. Yeah. So, and it might even be Hendrix's guitar, because Billy Gibbons was cited by Hendrix as being one of the world's greatest blues guitar players. Did you know that?
Yeah, I did know that, actually.
Yeah, because I think they supported him. ZZ Top supported Hendrix on a tour.
Yeah.
And I think that's what happened. Amazing. But it's great sound, fantastic energy. And he's so tight. And the band are so tight.
It's funny you pick up on the, as a guitar player, that you pick up on the drum breaks, right? Because I'm looking at you, like, not really realising that you would have ever said that. Because for me, it's that drive of the groove. And also, I just don't... How does he get that sound, Billy Gibbons? Because it's like this, like, two notes, like this high frequency.
Yeah, well, it's called pinch harmonics. That's what he's doing. He's actually... He's technical here.
Yeah.
He's hitting his thumb directly after the pick, and it actually creates a harmonic.
Right, okay.
And as you move your fingers, i.e. your right hand, up and down the... between the pickups,
yeah,
you actually get that pinched harmonic thing. It's a technique a lot of people that have used it over there. Rory Gallagher used to do it a lot, you know. But it's a great sound, you know, and in that, it really comes through, you know. Beautiful. It
definitely evokes, it's a strong song and a strong flavour of a song, isn't it?
It certainly is. I went to LaGrange. I certainly did. I've got a picture.
What, you went to LaGrange?
Yeah, I went to the turn of LaGrange.
All right,
yeah.
Not the house on Shaka.
I don't think it was still there. No. But I didn't look.
Well, they called it the Chicken Ranch afterwards.
Well, there was no clucking going on. Whoa! Anyway.
He's here all night, folks.
Well, yeah, but I've got a picture of myself outside the...
I've seen it, actually. I forget, because it's like, to me, the song's there and you went there and they like, sometimes you just don't connect it together.
Well, it was great. Actually, you probably wouldn't connect these two tracks together.
Ain't no love, 'cause you ain't around. 'Cause
Bobby Blue Bland from his album Dreamer, Ain't No Love in the Heart of the City.
Great song, but not written by him.
No, some guys called Michael Price and Dan Walsh wrote that one.
Unusual, because he was a prolific songwriter. And the first time I heard about Bobby Blue Bland was about 1974, listening to EC Was Here, the famous Eric Clapton live album. Well, it's certainly famous to me, because one of my favourite Eric Clapton albums, or the favourite. And he sort of says, there's a track by Bobby Blue Bland. It's called Further Up the Road. It's terrible.
He does, though. Yeah.
Well, that's exactly what he said. And that's why, oh, right, Bobby Blue Bland. I looked him up and found out he'd written loads of stuff. But he was also a band leader and a great performer in his own right as well, you know?
Yeah, and he used to hang out on the corner in Memphis with like B.B. King, of all people, when they were kids, and like Junior Parker and Johnny Ace, and they were known as the Beale Streeters.
Wow.
So cool, though. I love all these stories and how people meet each other in different places and the scene. I mean, at the time, they were just trying to do their music, weren't they? But this, sometimes I think it's retrospective that you go, oh, there was a scene, whereas probably for them, they were surviving, weren't they, and just trying to get on.
But I think through history of all types of music, there's always been a scene, and you know, collaboration and actually getting together with people with similar values and things. That's why people gravitate to certain geographical areas, you know, like happened to Nashville and Memphis and Chicago, all these things. People sort of gravitate
and London
there. Yeah, London
and
yeah.
Manchester. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's a huge, well, you know, over the years there's been massive scenes in Manchester, which I've been in and out of part of, you know. Yeah. And it was so great and very energizing to meet other musicians and other people doing things that you were doing, you know.
Yeah, I think it gives you a sense of life, of being alive, isn't it? It's like riding a motorbike really fast or playing a really good riff, or, you know, or just getting right into a song. It's that feeling of immediacy and of life, of being alive.
Totally. And, yeah. And of course, the most famous version of that song is the Whitesnake version, isn't it?
Yeah.
With David Coverdale with his spray-on pants and his socks down there.
Yeah, that was 1978. And also in 2001, Kanye West sampled it on Jay-Z's hip-hop album, The Blueprint.
Okay, I don't think we'll talk about that. But yeah, exactly. Of course, we will talk about this after we've heard it.
Say it's gonna die, but honey, be let's face it. Well, he just don't know what's going to replace it. Everybody's like calypsos, I've got nothing on real country music that just drives along. Well, hello, boy. Gets into your heart and soul. Well, let me tell you, baby, it's called rock and roll. They say it's gonna die, but honey, be let's face it. They just don't know what's going to replace it. Alice and Calypso's have got nothing on real country music that just drives along.
I'm gonna move her. Cliff Richard.
I'm gonna move her.
Are you attempting to do a female Elvis Presley? That sounded suspiciously like it.
It's just that you could just feel it. Would you just like close your eyes and listen to it? That's just how it feels, really. But that's credited as being one of the first authentic rock and roll songs produced outside the United States of America.
That's right. And we watched a video programme. I can't remember. It was the BBC. I can't remember what it was called now, the British Invasion or something. But it was talking about rock and roll, and it wasn't really a big scene. It was very quickly over.
Yeah, yeah.
It went straight from all that, you know, that earlier stuff, and then straight into Rolling Stones, you know? So there was it was a very short period.
So Harry Webb, a.k.a. Cliffy Richard...
Yeah.
Had a short, well, he did. I mean, obviously, he's had a really long career. But there's something about this as well, because there's this bar called the Two Eyes Coffee Bar in Soho. And it seems that everybody was going to this place as well, because Ian Samwell wrote that song.
Mm.
And he started off as the guitarist in the Drifters before they became the Shadows. But then when Hank Marvin joined the band, Bruce Welch came along, and then Ian didn't play guitar anymore. Even though he played rhythm guitar on that track.
I always thought that actually Hank played the lead guitar on that, but he didn't. And just looking into it, which has amazed me actually, because whenever you see him doing that live, it was always Hank because, you know, yeah. I'm Bruce Welch, yeah.
Yeah, because Ian Samwell went on to write for other people and also discovered the band America. So he had his own kind of journey as well. But isn't it interesting, Hank, and how influential Hank was?
Oh, yeah. Well, he was a
god. Of course.
You know, I mean, of course, I can't remember. This was recorded in 1958, so it was the year I was born. And, but, you know, guitarists were always looking for that Hank Marvin sound, weren't they? You know, it was the AC30 and the WEM copycat and the Strat. And, you know, and for years, that was the big thing that they really, really wanted, you know?
Yeah, and apparently, though, that was almost going to be the B-side, that song. But there was a programme called Oh Boy.
That's right,
and
yeah.
The producer, Jack Good, when he heard Move It, he said, look, if you want to come on my show, I want you to sing that song, not what you're going to release as a single. So they actually swapped it over because of wanting to get on Oh Boy. Oh Boy!
And probably a very good idea.
Yeah.
Pain and beating in my brain and losing all the pain right here inside.
You're listening to The Supertone Show with Susie Starlight and Simon Campbell of the Starlight Campbell Band.
You are.
Depeche Mode and Barrel of a Gun.
What is that track doing on our show? This is it. Well, I'll tell
because
you what.
We love it.
Well, we do love it. And the reason I'm going to answer my own question here.
Okay.
Because it's one of my top 10 albums. It's a great, great record. It is exposes emotion. The lyrics are fantastic. The production's amazing, and it's a great sound. And there's a lot of rock and roll guitar in there, which you do not associate with Depeche Mode, because, you know, when Vince Clarke was in the band earlier on,
yeah,
who went on to do, you know, with Erasure and stuff, it was very, very electronic. It was all sequences and all synths. And then later on, you know, they did Personal Jesus, which had that great little guitar.
Yeah, yeah, I love that song.
You know, and in it, and they really moved. And it is a very bluesy sort of sound with fuzz guitar, you know, that's why I really liked about it. And Garn's vocal is such a dark man, you know, he's been through it all. Just a great track to me.
Well, he was saying that Barrel of the Gun was about understanding what you're about and realizing that you don't necessarily fit into somebody else's scheme of things, and that, you know, you can have slight diversions from your path, but he thinks it's something that's written for us, that's like meant to be kind of feel. That's where that song comes from.
Is that right?
Yeah, but that's from, it was released in 97 on Ultra, wasn't it?
That's right, that's the album, yeah.
Yeah, which was their ninth album. But it's so atmospheric and so emotional.
Yeah, the whole album, though, it really has it does something for me. And it's one of those things I think you've got to listen to in a wanna. You've got to listen to the whole thing. It's like Radiohead and in Rainbows. I think taking an isolated track doesn't work. I think you've got to listen to it. The whole thing. It's like Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon. All those sort of albums, it really has something when it's all the tracks are played in the sequence that they intended, you know?
Yeah.
Somebody must change.
Blind Faith.
I love that song so much.
Mm. It is remarkable. I mean, his voice then was, you know, it's so high and so pure, and he's got such emotion, and it's a great guitar part. The drums, Ginger Baker as well, you know.
I know, he had two-thirds of the cream in that band with Clapton on guitar.
I mean, they were a real super group, you know, because it was who was on bass?
Rick Gretsch from Family.
Ah, of course, who you love. I mean,
of course.
That big, short-scale, grunting sound of Rick.
But you know, this song is one of the few songs that really moves me. And there's I think maybe it's I Can't Find My Way Home, I don't know. There's just that feeling. It's just so, so beautiful.
Mm. And I'm wasted and I can't find my way home.
Yeah.
Wasn't the Rolling Stone magazine say something about that?
They said they thought that particular line was delightful. I was thinking,
very un-Rolling Stone magazine.
Yeah, exactly. How could he say, I'm wasted and I can't find my way home, sort of thing. Oh, delightful, darling. Delightful.
But the whole, I mean, the album's great. And it was produced by Jimmy Miller. And
indeed.
We did a programme on Jimmy in our producer series a few months ago now, which is still available on Mixcloud.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's a real... you know, his production was really good because he really got involved, and you feel there's an energy in it, you know, that whole song. And a lot of Jimmy Miller's productions were like that because he really got involved in it, didn't he, himself, you know, very much in the music, and he was in the studio and he was playing tambourine and hopping around like a lunatic in there, you know.
But what's really struck me as well, because when we programmed this show, and then we watched the documentary with Eric Clapton, Life in 12 Bars.
We did.
It's completely opened up a whole new universe of empathetic understanding when it comes to Eric.
Yeah.
I feel
he's
so
had a lot
inspired.
Of bad press. He's had a lot of bad press, and he's been through some awful shit, you know. But when you actually understand, and, you know, we watch it, and it was a great...
And we don't want to give anything away.
No.
But we were so inspired, and I think because it's real, and the way that they actually just in terms of the technique, the way they've told the story of his life, which is, you know, is a mean feat in itself, really. I love the way that they've done it in a very authentic, honest way that they haven't. You'll find out it's a lot of narrative as opposed to in your face interviews,
indeed.
And I love the fact that it's. I think it was very difficult to actually have to talk about the emotional side and the pain and what it's like for you as a person to manage your emotions and manage your addictions.
In
and
the public eye as well.
Exactly. Mm. And how the one thing that keeps coming back as a pattern is the loners in the world are the ones that become so... skillful because they have a talent, but they put all the hours in because the skill is connected to the instrument and the music is their best friend.
Mm.
I also find that you see that a lot.
Well, you do.
That people have really embraced a musical instrument because it's their connection. Keeps them going, doesn't it?
And, of course, a mixing console as well because... this was recorded, the second bit of it, I think it was finished off at Olympic Studios, which is my favourite studio of all time. It had that beautiful old Helios console in there.
Yeah.
So I can understand feeling very close to a mixing console as well as an instrument.
Yeah.
she always didn't get her own way.
Judy's Farm, The Faces.
The bass in that song is incredible.
Yeah.
Do you know what? Usually I think of elephants with euphoniums, but that to me was a hippopotamus.
You know something? Talk about left field, baby. You really are very left field, but I get it, you know? Elephants
and
euphonium on the bass, yeah. And this is a hippopotamus.
It's almost drunk. It's this legato. It's like vroom, vroom, vroom. And then after that middle section you're pointing out as well.
Oh,
with the,
yeah, because just towards the end, a bit before it goes into that incredible rhythm guitar, which I'll talk about in a sec, Kenny Jones, he just swings the last few bars, doesn't he? He sort of puts little triplets in it just before it stops.
Yeah.
And then Ronnie Wood, who I really believe is one of the greatest and underrated guitar players kicking around, you know. In terms of rhythm on that, it's got such swing and style, you know, it's exactly what it is. And he goes, and the bass is going, the hippopotamus thing.
Exactly.
And it's beautiful, you know.
Yeah.
And Glyn Johns had a hand in producing that because he engineered it, didn't he?
Yeah.
Because the later Rod Stewart stuff that we love, we have the face of Rod Stewart on it, this early stuff all the time.
Because it's alive and it's vibrant.
Yeah. And, you know, and Rod Stewart must have learnt so much from Glyn Johns. But that is a beautifully produced record, you know. And, you know, I said it in programmes where we've featured the face before. They're always drunk and stuff. But, you know, it was a remarkable amount of dynamic in that whole track. They speeded up. You know, they didn't. There was no rules to them, you know.
No, but it was a feel, though, wasn't it? They were just into the feel and actually the live feeling of it, of being. But what's really odd as well is this comes from the third album, A Nod Is As Good As A Wink to a Blind Horse.
I hear the train a-coming, it's rolling around a bend, and I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when. I'm stuck in Folsom Prison and time keeps dragging on. But that train keeps a-rolling on down to San Antone. When I was just a baby, my mama told me, son, always be a good boy, don't ever play with guns. But I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. When I hear that whistle blowing, I hang my head and cry. I bet there's rich folks eating from a fancy dining car. They're probably drinking coffee and smoking big cigars. Well, I know I had it coming. I know I can't be free. But those people keep a moving, and that's what tortures me. Thank you.
if they freed me from this prison, if that railroad train was mine, I bet I'd move it on a little farther down the line. Far from Folsom Prison, that's where I want to stay. And I'd let that lonesome whistle blow my blues away.
Yeah! Johnny Cash, Folsom Prison Blues. That's the live version at Folsom Prison. I love the sound of that guitar.
So do I. It's great.
Fun.
It's super twang, isn't it?
Yeah.
And his voice, you know, for live. Oh, my head up high. Beautiful voice, rich, and you know.
Great. I love Johnny Cash. And that's the other thing. When we watched Walk the Line, it really, I know it's dramatised, but at the same time, you still get an empathetic understanding of someone's life, which really adds, I think, to a body of work. And he used to open every show, well, most shows with that song, you know. He'd be like, hello, I'm Johnny Cash. Ding, 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 ding.
What a
great
way to
opener.
Start. Yeah, great opening. Fantastic.
Yeah.
And that was actually recorded at the prison because he wrote it. Was it 53 or something? And
then
it was recorded in 68, yeah?
Oh, no, recorded in 1955, the studio version. You're right. That live version was 68.
Right,
it appeared on a studio album with his Hot and Blue guitar in 55, which is recorded at Sun Studios with Sam Phillips, producer guy.
The man.
But that live version was 1968.
So the funny thing is he actually went to the prison that he wrote about.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
And in fact, it was a Saturday night because it said that it was January 13th. I was thinking, I wonder what night of the week that is. So I had to look it up, but what day that was.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Saturday?
It was a Saturday night in prison.
Wow.
So it's kind of like the weekend for the guys there. The one thing that this is the positive conversation we're having about it. And then as you read on, you kind of look at, you know, you've got the same old thing about influences and people not, you know, plagiarisation and people not being credited for the influences in songs. And then you read, and there was one guy, I don't know how you pronounce his name, it's Michael Streisguth, I think that's right. He said that the cheering from the audience following the line, "But I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die," that cheering was added in post-production.
Not really great.
That's not cricket.
No, it's not cricket, no.
No.
But, you know, it's a great song, great actual version of it. I think it's our favourite one.
And I think also it did go on to say as well in this piece that the prisoners were actually not wanting to make too much noise or they didn't want any repercussions from the guard, basically. Mm. So there was no kind of, they couldn't be too badass because they just obviously have repercussions.
Well, it's in the 60s in American prison, you know. I mean, it's a pretty hard ass at the time.
Well, but it was saying as well that Johnny took the melody for the song and many of the lyrics from Gordon Jenkins' 1953 Seven Dreams concept album, and specifically a song called Crescent City Blues. And, you know, fair enough. Okay, they had to go to court, but he paid the man his dues.
Right.
To the sum of $75,000.
Probably earned a lot more than that.
Exactly. And he also won a Grammy, so congratulations, Johnny. Good work. So, you know, I mean, you could say all this. I mean, I'm not trying to be nitpickety here, because it's a great song.
It certainly is. Great performance, great song, great time.
We'll be right back.
I'm just a singer in a rock and roll band, the Moody Blues.
From the album Seventh Sojourn.
Indeed. And the last one, the last album that they used, The Chamberlain. Now,
what is a Chamberlain, you may ask?
Indeed, I'd never heard of this bloody thing.
Neither had I.
But it was the precursor to the Mellotron.
Yeah.
And the Mellotron actually came from the Chamberlain, and it was ripped off, essentially, from the design.
Yeah.
But this guy, this Chamberlain chap, he started it all.
Harry.
Off. Harry.
In Wisconsin.
Wow.
Do you know what? I've just read now, literally like 10 seconds ago, that when he actually had an orchestra that came in, and he recorded these sounds authentically using a Neumann U47 microphone.
Which we use in our vocals.
Exactly.
We certainly do.
As soon as I read that one, I go, I know you. I so know you. I love that mic.
I've played
Mellotron, which is basically on The Knife, your second solo album.
That's right, you did.
I did.
And one as well.
I was. I remember. The thing was, it was just the most... So you play the keys, so it's like it looks like a piano, and then you press the note down, and it goes...
That's exactly what it does.
It does. That's what you do.
I think we need to... Because actually, it's only a switch. The key is a switch because it actually has a piece of tape, tape underneath.
Yeah.
You press the key and there's a pinch roller that winds it up, plays that particular piece back, but it's only got such a length of tape.
That's right.
And as it gets to the end of the tape, how many seconds? I think that Mellotron we used was 16 seconds or 8, I can't remember now.
I know, I was just thinking the very same thing. I can't remember if it's 8 or 15.
There's
16.
A spring that eventually pulls it back, and as it gets to the end of its travel, the spring is at its full extent, so the tape the pinch roller can't quite get it. It goes, and it sounds like you're strangling it right at the end.
Well, I remember playing, and Andy was saying, he said, Andy Seward was producing your album, and he said, right, just, you know, let's just improvise, you know, play some melody. So I got this little motif going. It was,
yeah.
It was like, and I kept looking it down, going, what's going on? What's going on with this sound?
This is not electronic, this is analog, folks.
So it felt then, once you get used to the nature of it, so I can, going back to this, it's quite interesting, the whole experiment with sound, isn't it, really?
Well, the Mellotron, of course, was used by the Beatles, Strawberry Fields, very famously, and extensively used by the Moody Blues, on all the records, really, because it was a very orchestral sound. And this was written by John Lodge, the bass player, and it's a pretty fierce bass line, isn't it?
It is. It's doom, doom, ding, doom, ding, doom, 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 ding, doom, and it's fast.
It is fast.
And then you've got the lyrics as well, and they seem like somebody just put a space helmet on their heads because you try and sing along with it. And it's like, if you want the wind of change to know about you and you're the only other person to know, please tell me. I am a singer and I'm rocking my band. And then bass is going, ding, 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 ding. And you end up just vibrating like jelly by the end of it.
But that beautiful Justin Hayward guitar. What a great player, great singer, great songwriter, and great guitar player. Great sound. You know, I think he's obviously a fuzz in that again. You know, he uses an awful lot of fuzz guitar through an AC30 in his 335. Remarkable sound. And, you know, it's so underrated, that guy. So
yeah,
underrated.
I think
he's a bit
to.
Of a pretty boy. But I don't think people really wanted to sort of say, you know, isn't he great? Because he had everything. He could sing, he could write, he looked great, and he could play great. Himself.
Justin Hayward, he's kick-ass, all right? So we're just resetting that.
Yeah.
Kick-ass.
To rest, gonna go to the place that's the best.
You're listening to The Supertone Show with Susie Starlight and Simon Campbell of the Starlight Campbell Band, and that was Spirit in the Sky, Norman Greenbaum.
Amazing. You know something? When I heard that for the first time, I wondered, what was that funny noise on his guitar?
Really?
And fuzz. We're talking fuzz again. I love fuzz, and so much so that we've actually developed our own fuzz box.
Fuzz.
We have the Supertone
fuzz.
And I've been, you know, I just love it. And I love that burbling, crackly sound, because I believe that fuzz box was actually built into his guitar, into his Telecaster. So it was not like a stomp box on the floor, where you plug your guitar lead into. It was actually in the guitar itself. But I love it because it's just so dirty and gritty and organic sounding. But when you play through a fuzz box, you always listen to it. You think, God, that sounds shit. It sounds horrible. But you get it in a track, and my goodness me, doesn't it sound great? You listen to all the early Led Zeppelin stuff with Jimmy Page, you know. That's all fuzz. And
it's quite liberating, actually. It kind of gives you an attitude when you start playing with fuzz. I don't know what. It brings out the monster in you, the kind of the kick ass.
Justin Hayward, fuzz.
Fuzz.
Norman Greenbaum, fuzz.
Fuzz.
Lots of people, fuzz. But it's, anyway, that's my thing. And it's an amazing song. It's got such a fantastic groove, you know?
Well, it does. And every time we hear that song, your face lights up.
It does.
And you just start grooving, don't you? Because you just love it so much.
I do.
And the thing is that, well, Norman wrote that, and it was released in late 1969. And it's like a psychedelic rock, hard rock, kind of gospel fusion. And so, but he was actually, he's an Orthodox Jew.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. But he said that he was inspired by watching Western movies. And he thought, oh, I can do that.
Well, there we are.
Isn't that funny?
Well, then, like Greenbaum, it's not surprising, really, but I didn't think about it.
Yeah.
Because with Spirit in the Sky, now got a friend in Jesus. Well, there we are.
But do you know what really gets me about that song? I know it's the guitar and the fuzz. But it's the backing singers, Stovall sisters. They make me laugh so much.
They do.
Because they're kind of like slightly out of tune, but they're not. And then you can hear like different.
There's a lot of confusion in the backing vocals.
Thank you for explaining that in
all
that
of a
way.
Sudden you hear somebody going woo, at the end of it, and they're sort of not all tight. Yeah, they're not all that tight. And it's just great. Anyway,
so I've just found out their names are Nettie, Lillian, and Rejoice, and they are three girls out of a family of 22 kids.
No.
22 children. And they went on to, and they performed with B.B. King, Big Mama Thornton, Bobby Bland, and it gets even better, Earth, Wind and Fire, Parliament, Funkadelic, Ray Charles. They are absolutely there.
Wow.
In the scene. And they're my heroines.
Well, yeah.
Because they make me smile. Like, the guitar makes you grin, right? When I hear them. It's just, it's joyful.
Great. And great track from a great period in music.
And I think that's it for this week.
It is.
Another episode of the Supertone Show.
Escapade, more like.
See, I've had a really good time, actually. Fun.
Really great fun, yeah. Great fun.
Thanks for joining us as well. And
Yeah, and you can catch us on Mixcloud and iTunes and Spotify and iHeartRadio worldwide.
And if you want to get in contact with us, if you want to tweet, it's at Susie and Simon. S-U-Z-Y for me, by the way.
Yeah, that's right.
Susie and Simon.
Yeah, so tweet, you can email us. There's all sorts of contact possibilities. Instagram, we're everywhere.
Okay, until next time.
See you later.